Thank you very much, Ken. And thank you very much, Kate. And before that, thank you very much, Phil. I really enjoyed listening to you today, Phil. You're very, very inspirational. I'm not usually available at that time on Sunday afternoons, but today I was, so I was happy to hear you. And also, Becky, I was happy to hear you. And Carrie, I heard you too. I listened to Carrie in the car. I put it on Awakening Together Radio and plugged it into the auxiliary. So from Carrie on today, I have been listening. So I've been listening for a while. And now I guess it's my turn to talk. So welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening. And tonight we are going to begin with step 748. So here is a link to 748 for those of you who like to read along with me in the journal. And I like to play a song before we get started. So the song that has just jumped out at me is by an artist named Kathy Robel. And the name of the song is Artist of My Soul. All right. So it's good to be here with you all. And as I mentioned, we're going to start with the Seven Steps to Awakening, quote 748. And so let me read that quote to you. The ego sense that perceives the diversity is the creator of the division. The ego sense is bondage, and its cessation is liberation. It is so simple. And those last few words, it is so simple, were part of the quote, not my commentary. So again, the quote says, the ego sense that perceives the diversity is the creator of the division. The ego sense is bondage, and its cessation is liberation. It is so simple. So I'm going to go directly to my journal entry, 748A. It says, that which thinks about things divides into things. Without the thinking that divides, there is no division. That which thinks about things divides into things. Without the thinking that divides, there is no division. Let me give you an example that that maybe everyone has experienced at one time or another. Have you ever looked out a window, whether it be a car window or a hotel window or a house window, doesn't really matter. But have you ever looked out a window and just seen this beautiful landscape? Right? When you look out the window and you see that beautiful landscape and it takes your breath away, you're looking at a hole. The beautiful landscape is a hole. But then if you let the mind, you know, get involved in looking at the beautiful landscape, the mind is going to start dividing it up. You know, the mind is going to start saying, oh, those mountains over there, those are really beautiful. The blue sky, that's really beautiful. But the brown weeds, you know, on the ground, not so beautiful. It would be nice maybe if there was more greenery around here. And gosh, I wonder if there's any rattlesnakes in that desert. You know, I don't like rattlesnakes. And it's the mind, you know, the awareness, I suppose I will call it, that first glimpse out the window was just beautiful scenery, you know, just, I mean, it didn't even have that thought. It was just, right, just taken in by the beautiful scenery, by the whole. But then the mind can start dividing up and separating everything out and judging good and bad and desired and undesired and all of that. So again, the journal entry says, that which thinks about things divides into things. Without the thinking that divides, there is no division. Let me show you another little fun experiment. I suppose you can do whatever you want, but sometimes, you know, I want people to wait till the instructions are over so they'll get the full benefit of the experiment, where if you do it too soon, you might not get the full benefit. In just a moment, I'm going to ask you to look behind you. Not yet. Because, you know, right now you can't see behind you. So when you turn around and look behind you in just a moment, it's going to be a new glimpse. And when I ask you to do that, what I want you to notice when you turn around and look behind you, I want you to notice very quickly how awareness can take in everything. Awareness will take in everything that the eyes see. But then notice, you know, if you linger there a little bit, the mind will start labeling what it sees. And notice awareness was able to take it all in at once, but mind can really only label it one thing at a time. Okay? So first we're just going to turn around. I'll say 1, 2, 3, go. We'll turn around. We'll look behind us and just really be aware so that you can notice how quickly awareness can take in everything and how it doesn't need to label anything, right? Here we go. 1, 2, 3, go. Now again, if you linger there, your mind might start naming things. It might start, you know, in my case, door, doorknob, screen. But awareness took all of that in at once. And so when you play with that little exercise, when you think about it, you know, you might just kind of play with it with yourself. What you'll come to see is that awareness isn't dividing. It's that thinking mind that's dividing. Awareness is taking in the whole scene at once as a whole. But the thinking mind then says door, doorknob, screen, doorway. It divides into things, right? So that which is labeling, that which is creating the division, is also that which sees the division, where the awareness takes in the entire landscape as a whole. So again, that which thinks about things divides into things. Without the thinking that divides, there is no division. I'm going to go ahead and go to 748B, so I'm going to scroll down to the bottom and click 748B. You can join me there. 748B says, thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. Thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. And an attachment to thinking would be believing the thinking, or, you know, maybe even more accurately, now that many of us are in this gentle healing group together, casting our attention into the thoughts. Right? So I'm a little full right now. I fixed myself a very nice lunch while I was listening to Becky, and I ate it, and I'm a little full right now. So what I could do with my thinking is I could focus on how full the belly feels, and I could focus on complaint thoughts about how full the body feels, and I could probably even imagine it into like a discomfort, a pain. You know, oh, it's too full. I don't like how full it is, right? But the suffering is coming from those thoughts and from casting my attention into those thoughts. And, you know, one thing that I experience, I don't know if you all do, but one thing that I experience when I get tired at night is my legs start to hurt. I always know when I'm getting sleepy. Even before I feel sleepy at the head or the eyes, the legs begin to hurt. And, yeah, ache. And it's been that way ever since the first time I remember noticing it, I was in third grade. So it's like always been that way. you know, and I pretty much just accept that, you know. But, you know, I could really put a lot of attention into thinking about, oh, the legs are aching, woe is me. Every night I have to go through this pain. I'm never comfortable, you know, after 7 p.m. It's just so awful, you know, and then I'm going to suffer. I'm going to suffer. It isn't the ache that causes me to suffer. I've had the ache all of my life. Unfortunately, I've never really chosen to suffer from it. I think, you know, that's something that I have just kind of accepted. It's always been there, and I've just always been with it. You know, I know I'm getting tired and my legs are starting to hurt. But I could complain. I could be, you know, complaining within myself. I could be miserable. You know, I could suffer every single night. So those of us who do suffer, whether we suffer because of physical pain, whether we suffer because of that person we're married to, whether we suffer because of our children's choices, whether we suffer because of our boss and our boss's choices, whether we suffer because of the president and the president's choices, whatever we suffer with, we have one thing in common, and that is we're really suffering because of where we're choosing to cast our attention, where we're letting our attention go into. It's going into that thinking that divides and then, you know, says this is good, this is bad, this is desirable, this is not desirable, right? And it doesn't just accept everything as a whole, like the landscape. So again, the journal entry says, thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. And it doesn't say without an attachment to thinking, your legs won't ache at night, if they do, right? Because your legs, you know, may ache at night if they do, if that's just the biology that you have. Like I said, I've had that since third grade. That's the first time I remember it happening. If that's the biology that you have, that may just be the biology that you have. But the suffering comes from the thinking, not from the aching. I'm just looking at the board. Let's see. Ken has typed, the ego cannot assess the level of danger without breaking it into pieces and judging each one. Yeah, you know, that's probably very true, Ken. And in fact, you know, I've heard many spiritual teachers say that really the ego, and I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just saying I've heard many spiritual teachers say it. You know, my own withinness has never spoken to me about this, so I don't know this to be true or not true. But I've heard many spiritual teachers say that the ego, you know, has a usefulness. And the usefulness is survival. You know, like being able to look at a landscape and notice, oh, that's a rattlesnake. I need to walk around that. I don't want to just walk towards it. That's not a flower. That's a rattlesnake. Right? So the ego has a usefulness, and the usefulness is survival. The problem is, we have listened to it way beyond its usefulness. Right? We let it, you know, judge, break into pieces and judge way beyond, its usefulness. And of course, we also see it as more than a tool. We see it as me, and that's the problem. Yeah. Let's see. And then Ken is also saying, awareness does not see danger, so it can see it all as it is. All right, so I tell you what, I'm just going to read this one more time, then I really think I'm going to go back and look at the quote. I think this is all the journal entries I have. Oh, no, there's a 748C, so we'll continue then. Thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. And I'm just going to move on to 748C by scrolling down to the bottom and clicking. Oh, I like this. 748C says, listen not to thinking. Remain aware, naturally relaxed. Listen not to thinking. Remain aware, naturally relaxed. And this is something that we have to practice. I think I heard Carrie today when he was speaking, saying that we are all addicts. you know, and that's true. At the very least, even if we're not addicted to any foods or any substances of any kind, at the very least, we're addicted to thinking. What we're really addicted to is keeping our attention with thinking. The mind chatters and chatters and chatters, and we listen and listen and listen. In fact, it's surprising to me that we don't get tired giving all of that attention to a chattering mind that never shuts up. You'd think we would get just so tired of it. In fact, one of my favorite things from The Untethered Soul is when Michael Singer says, if you could take that thinking out of your mind and put it in another person's body, and put that body on the sofa next to you, and if they were saying everything to you that your mind is saying to you, you would, you know, probably not put up with it any more than 30 minutes. You wouldn't tolerate it. You'd kick that person out of the house. But the mind just goes on and on and on and on and on, and we listen to it all of the time. And I think Carrie's reason today that we are addicts, I think that's a truth. And as you know, when you're addicted to something, even if you are very aware of the fact that it's very unhealthy for you and you really want to become free of the addiction, it still seems to take some effort to become unaddicted. You know, even something as simple as smoking cigarettes. Many of us probably smoked cigarettes at an earlier time because once upon a time that was very common. Now it's not so common, so many of us have probably quit. And I'm sure that we all had our own experiences of moving through the quitting process. You know, it didn't just happen, right? Even if, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I mean, I quit many times before I quit, right? You quit and you take it up again, you quit and you take it up again. And finally, there was that time when I put them down and didn't pick them back up again, right? That happened for all of us. But there was this period where we really had to talk ourselves into not picking them up again. Because the body and the brain were accustomed to the habit of smoking and they wanted to continue smoking. And I will tell you, as addicted as we may have been to smoking, we weren't near as addicted to smoking as we are to our thinking. Yeah, Phil says he can't even imagine me with a cigarette, but there used to be a cigarette with me a lot. I think I quit smoking at age 26, but I really started at age 16, so I smoked for about 10 years. Yeah. So, quitting smoking, our addiction to smoking, was nothing compared to our addiction to thinking. And so, it's going to take some work, some efforting, to let go of that habit of giving attention to that chatter, chatter, chatter box in the mind, right? So, 748C says, listen not to thinking. And it's funny because the quote says, the last few words in the quote are, it is so simple. Listen not to thinking. It is so simple. But it's not going to be easy. Right? It's not going to be easy. And that's what we need to look at. And Carrie says, I wasn't sure you were here when I was talking. I actually wasn't here, Carrie. I was driving down the road, but I was listening to Awakening Together Radio in my car. So I was listening to you, but I was not, you couldn't see me. Yeah, I was listening in the car. All right, so listen not to thinking. Remain aware, naturally relaxed. This is something that we need to practice. We need to practice, remain aware, naturally relaxed. If we practice, remain aware, naturally relaxed, to me that's the positive side of the equation. If we practice, remain aware, naturally relaxed, we will start not listening to thinking as much. And I'll tell you why, at least this is how it feels to me. When I'm listening to my thinking, it's like awareness is constricted. Now, it actually isn't. Awareness is always general and open, but somehow it's general and open, and then within that general openness, there's also a constriction or a contraction. So, you know, if you imagine this open, general, soft awareness, and then somehow in the middle of that open, general, soft awareness, some of the awareness gets very constricted or very contracted and becomes very tight, like a flashlight beam, instead of just the light being very open and general, like the light of day, it's constricted like a flashlight beam. That's what I call attention. The awareness is constricted into a flashlight beam, and then that flashlight beam is zoomed right in to the thoughts. And that attention is just listening to every single solitary thought. Very constricted, very tight. You know, we may not recognize it as tight, but it's very tight. It's actually an effort. We may not recognize it as an effort because we're so accustomed to it, but it's really a very efforting thing to be listening to thought. And so, the opposite of that tight constriction, attention zoomed right into thought is relaxed general attention. That's the opposite. When you have this relaxed, open, general attention, you're not constricted into a thought. You just can't be both at the same time. And this is why, I don't know if you guys come and listen to Gina Lake on Wednesdays here in the sanctuary, but one of the things Gina often talks about is returning to your senses, you know, like your sight and your hearing and your feeling. You know, when you return yourself to your senses and start paying attention to what am I hearing right now? What am I feeling right now? What am I seeing right now? In a very whole, way, you know, kind of like you're trying to take in the whole landscape, right, in a very whole way, you move back to that general open awareness. In fact, why don't you all just try it right now? I'll quit talking because listening to someone talking is a little bit like the constriction that goes into thought. So I'm going to quit talking, but I might make some noises and just relax and just be very aware of the noises you hear coming from me as well as any other noises that might be in your environment. Be very aware of how you feel, your seat against your chair, if you're sitting on a chair, how your body feels. And just kind of relax. All right. Hopefully those props weren't too distracting and at the same time gave you something to kind of relax and listen to. Could you feel the difference between being in your senses, paying attention to what you were hearing, what you were feeling, maybe, you know, what you were smelling, and being lost in thought? Could you guys feel how one is very open and very general and very relaxed, when the other is very tight, very constricted? So, one thing we addicts can do, one practice is during the day, whenever we think of it, as much as we remember, doing what Gina says, returning our attention to our senses. You know, so for example, if you're washing dishes and your mind is all constricted and caught in thought, but then you notice it, just relax and notice what the feel of the water is like on your hands, what the smell of the soap is like. Literally pay attention to the cleaning of the dishes, the rinsing of the dishes. You know, just return yourself to your senses is the way she says it. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh would call that mindfulness. Right, he called that mindfulness, and he has a great question that he invites us to ask. Again, whenever we find ourselves caught up in thinking, just ask, where am I now? That's his question, where am I now? And the purpose of where am I now is to bring you from that tight, constricted attention to the general openness and awareness of just where you are now, physically. Where am I now? If we begin to practice general awareness, right, we're going to simultaneously reduce our addiction to thinking. We're going to spend less time in thinking as we spend more time in general awareness because you can't be in both at the same time. And general awareness is so sweet. Because the truth is, and I'm sure you guys know this, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, when we're lost in thinking, we're actually missing now. You know, we're missing wherever we are and whatever is going on. You know, we're missing how nice the water feels when we wash the dishes, how good the soap smells, you know. When we're driving down the street, we're missing the scenery that's going by or, you know, the other cars, the other people, the songs that are playing on the radio. We're missing everything when we're lost in thought. And so we actually live more fully as we learn to relax into that general awareness and be present. So in addition to breaking our addiction to thinking, we are living more fully. And what you'll also notice, you'll live more happily. More fully, more happily. Because remember what the previous journal entry said. In fact, let me just go back and read this previous journal entry. It was a couple back. It was 748B. It was only one back. Thinking causes all psychological pain. Right? Thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. So if you learn to practice that general awareness, learn to practice that mindfulness, learn to bring yourself to your senses, notice where you are now, right? What's happening around you, right? If you do all of that, you're not going to be suffering. You're going to be more joyful because the suffering comes from the constricted attention into the thoughts, the suffering thoughts. Yeah, and Phil is saying that it'll all taste better when you actually taste it. It'll all taste better when you actually taste it. And in fact, that's one of the opportunities to practice is when you're eating a meal. You know, many people, again, when eating a meal, they're completely lost. If they're alone, they're lost in thought. If they're with someone else, they might be lost in conversation. Lost in conversation can really be the same thing as lost in thought. So if you just start noticing your food, you know, noticing the taste of your food, the smells of your food. Again, when you're practicing this open general awareness, you're removing the addiction to thought. Oh, yeah, Kathy is saying, when someone is crazy, we say to them, come to your senses, woman. Yeah, so that's the way Gina Lake teaches it. Yeah. So, again, this 748C says, listen not to thinking. Remain aware, naturally relaxed. So that's the doing, if you call that a doing. It's really less of a doing than listening to thinking is. But that's the doing, the practicing of remaining that open awareness. I was listening to Rupert Spira on Awakening Together Radio this week. And he was talking about the same thing, you know, in his own way. And he was saying something like, you know, when our minds are accustomed to being, you know, attached to our thinking all the time, he says that's like walking around with a closed fist. And he says, you know, if you close your fist, you'll notice that takes some effort. But if you keep your fist closed for 25 years and then somebody tells you to open it, opening the fist is not going to take effort because it kind of got frozen in the closed position. In fact, if any of you have ever had a broken wrist, right? And when I had my broken wrist and it's in a cast, in my case it was in a cast for 9 weeks. Yeah, when you take it out of the cast, you have to do some physical therapy to get your hand and everything working again, right? Because it's become frozen in that position. That's what we're in a cast. We're in an attention cast. Our attention cast into thought. That is our cast. We're in a cast. We've been in a cast for a very, very long time. You know, I don't know at what point in this lifetime, whether it's at age 1 or age 2, when we start casting our attention into thoughts, but since a very young age, our attention has been in a cast. And now what we're trying to do is reverse that. And so again, even though we're talking about an unactivity, relaxing and being open general awareness, that's an unactivity. It's going to feel like an activity because it's the opposite of our addiction. And so we'll need to practice that. So again, listen not to thinking, remain aware, naturally relaxed. So that's 748C. So let me just go back and read 748A, 748B, and 748C right in a row. That which thinks about things divides into things. Without the thinking that divides, there is no division. Thinking causes all psychological pain. Without an attachment to thinking, suffering is impossible. Listen not to thinking. remain aware, naturally relaxed. And again, the quote said, "The ego sense that perceives the diversity is the creator of the division. The ego sense is bondage, and its cessation is liberation." It is so simple, but I think what I've been saying is it doesn't feel simple. And that, again, is because we're addicts, right? We are addicted. And so we need to begin to practice that general awareness. Remember, the general awareness is much more like the landscape, right? Awareness just takes in the landscape. It's very open. Just like when we did the little exercise where you turned around and looked, awareness took it all in. We want to be open, relaxed, and taking it all in. Right? Be awareness. Abide as yourself. Be awareness. Be aware. And as we practice being awareness, being aware, we'll bring ourselves out of that addiction to thinking. It is so simple. All right, so that moves us to quote number 749. "I am the body is delusion, not truth. You are the pure self or undivided consciousness." I am the body is delusion, not truth. You are the pure self or undivided consciousness. So rather than talk about this, I prefer if we can just notice that that's true. So, again, I'd like everybody just to kind of become still. If you're multitasking or something right now, and I know how easy that is to do, you know, when we're here on the computer and Facebook is on the computer and, you know, Donald Trump is on the computer, the news about him, and your email is on the computer. But if you can just take a few minutes for me, just, you know, humor me a little bit. Stop multitasking for a second. Oh, dinner's in front of you, Becky. Yeah. We'll try to do this quickly enough that your dinner doesn't get cold. If you just take a moment and just be with me for a second. Actually, what I really want you to be with is you. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to just notice that you are aware. We'll start with that. And again, just be that open, general awareness and just take in whatever sounds you hear in your environment. I'm not going to move around this time. You might notice also the feeling that you have, not the emotional feeling right now so much, but the touching. You know, like I can feel my feet against the floor, my butt against the chair, my back against the chair, my hands are touching each other, my arms are against my body, my hair is touching my cheeks. You know, so notice whatever hearing and whatever feeling is present for you. And notice also that it's really awareness. It's you, but it's also awareness because they're the same. It's awareness that's aware of what you hear. It's awareness that's aware of what you feel. Just pay attention to that and notice that is true. If you can really start to shift your attention to awareness a little bit, while still listening to the hearing and feeling the feeling, but just kind of let awareness become primary in your attention. Notice that awareness is. While noticing that awareness is, while continuing with that noticing, again, return a little bit to noticing the feeling of the body, maybe the feet against the floor, the seat on the chair. Notice the feeling of the body is in awareness. Awareness goes beyond the body. In fact, awareness has no boundaries, but awareness is going beyond the body. If your eyes are open, awareness is including in everything you see. Whether your eyes are opened or closed, it's including everything you hear. All of that is within awareness. The body is only one thing within awareness. In fact, if you hear anything that's some distance away from you, like I can hear my heater, which is some distance away from me, and I can feel the body, which seems very close to me, but if you pay attention to awareness, they're equally in awareness. The sound that you hear is as in awareness as the feeling of the body is in awareness. They're equally in awareness. To awareness, there is no space. Awareness just is, and everything it is aware of is within it. Now look with a bit of an inquiring mind and ask yourself which statement is more true based on your experience. Is it true that you are the body? Or is it true that you are the awareness? Which statement is more true based on your experience as you look? Which one is more intimately you? Which one is more truthfully you? If you see yourself as awareness, you may notice the body is an experience within you, but it is not what you are. And then we'll just let that go now, so that Becky can get back to her dinner. Hopefully you were able to feel that a little bit. Obviously it wouldn't have worked if you were multitasking. If you're only kind of half listening to me, you need to give your entire self to that little practice. But you may have noticed that although you definitely experience yourself as the body, you know, I mean, there's no doubt about that. We're not going to deny that experience. Even the Course says to deny that experience is a very unworthy form of denial, right? We definitely have the experience of the body. But if you really pay attention, if you carefully pay attention, you'll notice that awareness is more intimately you. You're not the body, right? The body is an experience, a temporary experience. It really isn't what you are. And you can see that when you take the time to look. So that's what this quote is saying. Quote number 749. I am the body is delusion, not truth. You are the pure self or undivided consciousness. But to me, it's just, although it's really nice, I suppose, in a way that people talk about this, because if people didn't talk about the fact you are consciousness, you are awareness, we might not get enough curiosity to start practicing these little exercises that let us see it for ourselves, right? But it isn't the talk that shows us the truth. It's the practices, the exercises, the games, whatever you want to call them. And of course, the more time you spend noticing yourself as awareness, the more you become aware that's what you are. So they're kind of important games if your goal is to know thyself. I'm going to go ahead and go to the journal entry for 7:49. This was written on August 10th, 2013. What am I? Am I the body? The body shifts and changes. Does the witnessing I am ever shift or change? What is directly that which I am, and what is a projection or a belief of I am onto an object? Without the projection of I am onto an object, what is the self? Dove talked this morning about he called it a near-death experience, when he rose above the body. When Cheryl was here, Cheryl told me she had the same type of experience. She called it, I think, an out-of-body experience. I don't know if hers was near-death, but she was above the body. I think maybe Lynn has had that type of experience, too. It seems like I remember Lynn talking about that. So, you know, many people have had this experience where they perceive themselves as outside of their own body, looking down on their body. I've never had that experience, but plenty of people have, so I certainly trust it. And with my imagination, I go into their stories, you know, and I think, if I'm here looking down on the body and the body's there, what am I? Am I the body? If I'm hovering above the body, looking down on the body, being aware of the body, am I the body? And it's kind of interesting because when I hear people talk about these experiences, very seldom do I hear someone say, what I learned from that was I'm not the body. I don't usually hear that, and I often wonder why. What I learned from that was I am not the body, right? Because that seems to me to be a pretty obvious lesson. That's like when I had the experience of being the apple. What I learned from that is I'm not a human. Not only am I not the body, I'm not a human. I'm not the way, you know, because the apple, again, like I've told you all before, the apple didn't think like a human. The apple had no brain. There was nothing about the apple that was human, yet it was still me, I, awareness. I love the story that Byron Katie tells about how she was walking through a mall one day, and she shifted into the body of I think it was an 80-something-year-old woman. It might have been a 90-something-year-old woman, but I think it was an 80-something-year-old woman who could hardly walk and, you know, an old body. And she could see the young 40-something Katie body, you know, walk around the corner. And here she was in this body. And she talks about how this body smelled bad because the woman was too old to clean herself properly. And she's in this body. And you know, Katie talks about how she's like, oh, no, you know, I don't want to be in this body. And then she remembers to practice the work, right? But the point is, if awareness can in one moment be in the Katie body and then shift and be in the old woman body and watch Katie walk around the corner and out of sight? What am I? What's the lesson in that? What am I? Am I the Katie body? How could I be if I'm now in the O1 body watching the Katie body walk around the corner? Many of you have probably listened to the Alan Watts audio this week because that was the assignment. And, you know, Alan Watts kind of talks about this a little bit in his audio. He says something about, he starts off, he deceives us a little. He's tricking us in order to make a point. So he starts off talking about how, you know, life is just so coincidental and circumstantial. He says, you know, just think about it. If your mother and father had met, you wouldn't be, would you? You know, and I think probably everybody's like, no, I wouldn't. Wow. And then he says, yeah, you would be. You'd just be somebody else. You know, he says, we're all the same one. We all have the same name. I love this part. We all have the same name, I. We all call ourselves by the same name, I or me. You know, if Becky and I could, you know, if we could somehow make this happen, these things tend to just happen, but if we could make ourselves shift and suddenly I'm in California, Becky eating dinner and kind of listening to Regina, and then Becky's here, Regina speaking, and he, you know, Becky's still going to say I. You know, when the experience ends and I come back to Regina and she goes back to Becky, she's going to say, I was Regina. You know, I was there. I was inside of her. I, her mind was my mind. I was speaking like her. I was teaching like her. It was amazing. But she's still going to say I. I was in Regina. And I'm going to say I was in Becky. I was thinking like Becky. I was seeing like Becky. I was, you know, I had these opinions that Becky had, right? But we're both still going to say, I. So what is that? What is that I that we all have, that we all are? We all have the same name. What is that I? That whether it's in this body, seen through the filter of this mind, or it's in that body, seen through the filter of that mind, it's still I. You know, and another way to look at that I is, you know, you haven't always been your current age and your current shape. And your mind hasn't always thought like your mind thinks now. Most of us are old enough that we've gone through many different reiterations of thinking. Our spiritual thinking has changed. Our political thinking has changed, right? Maybe our thinking about marriage has changed. Our thinking has changed. So the body has changed significantly. The mind has changed significantly. And yet we still say I. I was that 5-year-old playing in the field that got stung by a bee. I was that 6th grader that gave that report and the teacher was really happy and I was really proud, you know, of my poster that I drew. I was the girl that got jilted and my heart was broken and I was embarrassed to see anyone. You know, as I go through these many different phases, which really have very little in common because this Regina person has changed a lot in one lifetime, it's I. What's that I? I was an apple. I was above my body. I shifted from the 40-year-old body into the 80-year-old body. I had a dream about lazy students in a lazy school. What's that I? I've had dreams, not many. Most of my dreams, I still am Regina Dawn Akers, but I've had dreams where I wasn't Regina. I remember one dream, I was a 15-year-old boy. What is the I that was a 15-year-old boy and experienced itself as a 15-year-old boy in my dream? What are we? And what are we not? What's the difference? Like Alan Watts said, even if your mother and father had never met, you would still be. You would just seem to be someone else. But that someone else is still I. And we're all I. In fact, one thing that I've contemplated somewhat since listening to the Alan Watts audio, you know, I'll be like watching other people driving cars in traffic or walking through the grocery store or whatever, and I'm looking at them contemplating, that's the same I. The same I. Not a different one. The same I. We're all the same I. That's amazing, isn't it? But true. And what if we contemplated the fact that we're the same I more than we contemplated our apparent differences? Jamie. Jamie is the same I. My dog, Jamie. In case you guys don't know who Jamie is, she's the same I. She doesn't say I. She's the same I. If I popped into her and I became Jamie, when I was done, I'd say, I was Jamie. It's the same I. I would experience myself as that. Funny thing happened the other day. I went to the doctor, and it was a new doctor visit. and so they asked me, you know, many questions. And one of the questions she asked me is, she said, what race do you identify with? And I said, Caucasian. And then she went on to tell me how she hates asking that question because some people get really mad. And she says, sometimes they'll say, the human race. And I said, oh, well, then I'm consciousness. And she just laughed. And I said, I'm even beyond the human race. I'm consciousness. But that's the truth, right? Because I am experiencing myself as a human now, but I have experienced myself that I remember as an apple, and I'm certain I could experience myself as Jamie, and I'm the same I. I am consciousness. Beyond Caucasian, beyond human race, consciousness. You know, and so let's take Rev Gloria. Rev Gloria, if she and I were standing side by side at the doctor's office and they asked us what race we were, you know, I would say Caucasian and she would say, you know, black or African American, however she says that, right? But we're consciousness. And in fact, some of you may know that I have memories of two previous lifetimes where I was a black, well, in one I was a black girl. I don't know what happened in that lifetime. I don't have any recollection of growing up. So in one I was a black girl, and then in one I was a black woman. Now I'm a Caucasian woman. What am I? If I can be a black girl shortly after slaves ended, if I can be a young black woman in the 1930s during the Depression, and then I can be a Caucasian girl here in or woman. Actually, I'm not a girl anymore. I'm 56. A Caucasian middle-aged lady. What am I? What am I? What is that I? You know, and some people would say the I is the ego, but not the I I'm talking about, because I assure you the apple had no ego. So the I I'm talking about is beyond the ego. So let me just read this one more time, and then it's time for me to close. So the quote I am reading is number 749, I am the body is delusion, not truth. You are the pure self or undivided consciousness. And here's the journal entry. What am I? Am I the body? The body shifts and changes. Does the witnessing I am ever shift or change? What is directly that which I am? And what is a projection or a belief of I am onto an object? Without the projection of I am onto an object, what is the self? And that's it for me today. Thank you very much, y'all, for hanging out with me, and I'll be hanging out with you for the rest of the evening. Bye.
Hey, Regina. Always love your seven steps.